Hot Iowa Politics Podcast for Friday, May 16th, 2014. I'm Mike Weiser, State House Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises. Today, we're going to talk U.S. Senate campaign, the governor's race, and climate change. With me are James Lynch, political writer for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Hello, James.
Hello, Mike.
Christina Crippis, political writer for the Waterloo Courier. Hi, Christina.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
And Ed Tibbetts, political writer from the Quad City Times. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Mike. Hi, everybody.
You can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes. First up, endorsements and new polling data coming out of the Republican Party primary for U.S. Senate. Joni Ernst is a frontrunner by 11 points, according to the latest Loras College poll, and she's picked up a couple of key endorsements, including the NRA. Mark Jacobs gets the endorsement of Agriculture Secretary Bill Norte, and Sam Clovis announced he has the endorsements of the 2012 Iowa Republican caucus winner Rick Santorum. Christina, the Loras poll also showed that nearly 30% of the 600 likely Republican voters that were polled are still undecided. What do you expect to see in these last couple of weeks with these candidates, and is there anything that you've seen that's been working for these candidates?
Yeah, well, I'm sure Iowans probably don't want to hear this, but I expect we'll see a lot more attack ads running on TV and a lot more negative stories coming out from the candidates or their surrogates here in the last couple of weeks. That's kind of a tried and true method, whether we like it or not. Also, I think what they'll be doing is just working their ground game more, reaching out to as many voters as possible. Yesterday, both Mark Jacobs and Sam Clovis held events in our region, and they and Matt Whitaker were at the Central Committee meeting last night. So they're out actually trying to meet with voters. They stayed through the whole hour and a half long meeting and stayed just to, you know, keep talking with voters and make their case. And then Joni Ernst is, of course, also making her Make 'em Squeal tour. So I think, you know, the ground game is something that they'll see, and I think that's another method that will, you know, get voters out there. I guess as far as what is working, I guess, you know, we've all seen Joni Ernst's ads and know that they're getting attention, maybe not always for the right reasons, but they're getting attention, and that's what you need to get voters looking at you. And I think that will be something that the other candidates will try to build off of or at least go after to make their case of why those ads aren't effective. So I think anything's possible here in the next couple of weeks.
You're going to see these candidates, we'll see these candidates up in the Quad Cities on Monday for a Republican primary debate. We were talking just a little bit before the show about how the gloves haven't come off so far in these debates, but do you expect something different now that we're down to the final weeks of this campaign?
Well, I certainly think it's possible, and more likely given the proximity of the primary that during this debate they'll contrast with one another more. But I think where the real action will be, as Christina alluded to, it'll be in these TV ads. And you've seen Jacobs take to the air to attack Ernst on her votes on the gas tax and missing votes in the legislative session. My question is, will Joni Ernst have the resources to match that and continue the attack that's been launched on Jacobs over his cap and trade comments? And frankly, I'm wondering whether some of these outside groups that have already gone after him on these issues, whether they will fill the gap if Ernst doesn't have the resources to do that. Those are key questions for me, and as Christina says, time will tell, and we've got a few weeks left.
I think what's kind of interesting as you look at this is that we see the ads on TV and see those dynamics playing out, but there's another part to this race, the real possibility that it goes to a convention, that the nomination isn't decided on June 3rd. And I think it's much harder to see that ground game, you know, what they're doing to line up delegates, you know, one by one and county by county across the state. So, I mean, it's sort of the, you know, the duck in the water sort of thing. There's a lot of activity under the water that we're not able to see. And we won't know how that's working unless this goes to a convention. If it doesn't go to a convention, I guess it really won't matter.
Well, I think James brings up a good point, and I think it probably is important to know these answers when you think about people like Sam Clovis. I think he's had a pretty good week. He's raked in some endorsements, but Dolores' poll had him only at 9%. I wonder if maybe there's some sentiment in there for him that might lift him above that.
Well,
I don't know the answer to that.
And Clovis, when you talk to his supporters, they're pretty, I don't know if I'd say confident, but they see the possibility of a convention as being very real, and they feel they're in the best position of anybody in the field if it does go to a convention. So this Loras College poll may be accurate, but if nobody hits 35%, it's a whole new ball game.
Next up, Governor Terry Brandt had announced a record-setting quarter for a gubernatorial candidate, raising $1.1 million. Presumptive Democratic nominee Jack Katz says he'll have his figures out Monday. James Lynch, you followed the fundraising total in this and in previous cycles. What do you make of this plus $1 million fall?
Well, Mike, I look back at stories from 4 years ago when the Branstad campaign reported $1.6 million over the same January to May period. And I guess it just reinforces the fact that Terry Branstad is quite a fundraiser. And I think he set lofty goals this time. This is his last campaign, and he said he wants it to be his best campaign. And I think he wants to raise more money than he's ever raised in the past. In January, when he came out with numbers that were very high, $4.1 million cash on hand, people said he was boasting about and trying to scare off any opposition. Well, now his opposition is Jack Hatch, and certainly we'll be watching to see what sorts of numbers he posts Monday when he releases his campaign finance numbers. But I think he's going to be hard-pressed to match Branstad. And I mean, he has to come up with a pretty good number to look like he's really in this race. And that's kind of the second point here is that, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, the Democratic Governors Association didn't have Iowa on their first or second tier of priorities in this election cycle. Hatch said after that when those two polls came out or three polls came out that showed him within just a few points or tied with Branstad, that the Democratic Governors Association was reconsidering, that they were starting to look at this Iowa race and considering getting in and helping Jack. But if he doesn't post some really strong fundraising numbers Monday, I think the DGA will probably take a pass on Iowa this time.
Do you see, with the governor raising so much money and having so much on hand, I guess it depends on what Jack Hatch comes out with. I don't know how serious a threat is it, but do you see Branstad taking a bigger role in not just his campaign this time around, but also supporting other candidates, maybe his favorite candidate, the Republican nominees for the parties across the way, or really getting involved in the legislative races? Has that been his sort of forte, or does he kind of stick to himself?
Well, I think like any politician, Governor Branstad's going to look after number one first. And I think that as we've talked about on this program in the past, some of these polling numbers have sent some warning signals about his tenure in office. And so I think he's, as you might expect, always going to look after number one first, help out where he can in other places. But his race is going to be top of mind. I think James is... James is right. I mean, there's two things that we tend to look at for competitiveness. That's fundraising and polling. And they've had Branstad and Hatch have had a back and forth over what the polling shows. But the fundraising numbers, absent what Senator Hatch is going to report on Monday, has been pretty unambiguous. So, yeah, I think there's an expectation that Senator Hatch has to post some decent numbers.
And lastly, we had a bevy of federal officials in Des Moines this week talking climate change. Illinois Governor Pat Quinn joined them, but Iowa Governor Terry Branstad was on the trail for a variety of meet and greets and did not show up in Des Moines. Quinn even ripped the governor for not pushing harder for rail in the Hawkeye State. Ed Tibbetts, was it bad form for the governor of Iowa to be on the road during this two-day climate change conference?
Well, I don't think it's ever a bad thing for the governor to be out in the state away from the Capitol. Look, climate change isn't an issue that's going to be embraced by most Republican governors. The party's base is, at best, skeptical about science. I do think the Quinn jab was kind of interesting. It's no secret that Governor Branstad will take a shot at Illinois and at Illinois governors every chance he gets. It's part of his stump speech when he's over here in the Quad Cities. And, you know, it's not lost on me that, or anybody else, I think, that Quinn is facing a tough re-election battle from Republican Bruce Rauner. So I'm sure it's somewhat gratifying for Governor Quinn to be able to push Branstad a bit on this passenger rail issue.
Governor Branstad was fairly defensive when we asked him about the conference. He was over here in the Cedar Rapids area, and I asked him if he was boycotting it, and he said, no, I've had this event on my calendar for months. You know, it's been planned for a long time, and that's why he's over here. But what was interesting, as we asked him questions about climate change, I don't think he ever used the words climate change in his responses. He wouldn't even use those words. You know, so it really was indicative of the, you know, sort of Republicans not even acknowledging climate change exists, let alone as a problem. You know, he just would not put those two words together.
I guess I'd agree with James. I remember a few years ago we had a pretty bad drought, and I asked the governor about the issue, and he did the same thing. I mean, it was just avoid just even mentioning climate change. It was like, we got to deal with the issue at hand, and that's what I'm going to talk about. But I did think it was interesting in some of his comments that he did keep kind of coming back to the renewable fuel standard, which when you're talking climate change or when you're talking alternative energy, that's a huge issue for the state. And I think it was pretty savvy of him to keep coming back to an issue that will make people like him, regardless of whether they're climate change skeptics or whether or not they, you know, are on board with it. That's an issue that islands are going to care about.
And that's it for today's On Iowa Politics podcast. I hope it was worth your time. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes. It'll help more people find the podcast. You can find us every week on the homepages of the Quad City Times, Sioux City Journal, Muscatine Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Waterloo Courier, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Dead Larry, a folk outfit from Iowa City, will take us out. If you're in a band or know a talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, drop us a line. Better a sound file, and remember to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on iTunes. For James, Ed, Christina, and producer Max, I'm Mike Weiser. Thanks for listening.
Today is gonna be the greatest, it's gonna be the bestest damn day I ever had. It's today I climbed the top of a mountain, laid in a hot spring fountain, and laid my fears to rest. But if you wanna go, go home. Done for, and now I'm laying on the floor, and I've found another friend. And tonight, I can think of nothing better than laying here together, together till the end. Gonna go. It's tomorrow. Maybe I'll still be here, but maybe I will disappear, and maybe you will too. But if you wanna go, go home. Don't let me stop you. If you wanna tell me something, turn off the lights and close the door. If you wanna go, go home. Don't let me stop you. If you wanna tell me something.
go, go, go.